Welcome to the Mile High Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Daniel Knowles, joining you from an altitude of 5,280 feet, where we encourage you to be in September. We look forward to seeing you in September on higher ground, September 23rd to 25th. And today, we really are enjoying you having the opportunity to connect with our special guest, Dr. Christy Kwan. Christy Kwan is one of not only one of my dear friends in chiropractic, really one of the incredible voices in terms of research, influencers in terms of research, and I believe it's still executive director of the Foundation for Vertebral Subluxation. I've misspoken, I apologize. And really is championing for many, many years now the importance of research for in the chiropractic profession, focused on subluxation and the adjustment. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Christy Kwan.
Thanks, Danny. It's always such a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm happy you're getting a chance to chat. And hi, everyone out there. Thanks for tuning in. I suppose it's a bit of a promotion. I recently joined the board of directors for the Foundation for Vertebral Subluxation, so stepping away from the executive director role.
Wow.
Someone asked me the other day, a good friend of mine who's a chiropractor, said, oh, so are you doing more? I said, you know, I don't feel that I am, but the year has been in such a lull, it's hard to say. But I'm honored to be on a board of directors with really amazing chiropractors like Dr. Kent and Dr. McCoy, Dr. Veronica Gutierrez, who many younger chiropractors don't know, but has been so essential in, you know, making political action and health policy changes to support chiropractors of the year. She's in Washington State. And I know she keeps trying to retire, and we keep telling her no, as well as Dr. Curtis and Dorchak. So I feel really honored to be part of the foundation since 2010, after 10 years of service as the ED, because I was pursuing my master's in public health and taking a lot on. I really kind of stepped away some, but I'm really glad to be part of that organization. I'm really glad that I've been able to be a part of Mile High for so many years.
And so are we. We appreciate all that you do for chiropractic. And actually, now is a good moment to say actually that congratulations are in order, because you now have a third name there added. Yeah. So it's Christy Kwan Ritter. Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Ritter.
Yeah.
Hyphenated. The hyphenation's only Facebook official at this point. But yes, thank you. We're able to get married. I do not recommend planning a wedding for 18 months during a global pandemic to anyone. But we are really happy to finally, you know, sign the dotted line and set our IDs, and looking forward to the world opening back up so we can celebrate with friends and family.
And we're celebrating for you from a distance. Yeah. And so let's talk about research. And first of all, what is the foundation working on? The Foundation for Vertebral Subluxation is vital to the advancement of chiropractic. What are things that have gone on in the foundation the last year or so?
Thanks, Danny. Well, the foundation and Chiro Futures recently hosted the Immunity Conference last fall. And so it was a really exciting opportunity to get a lot of people together in one room for the first time in some time, and kind of get that energy going to talk about the topic of chiropractic and immunity. And stemming from that, there's been some projects in the works. Our guidelines project is still ongoing, and Dr. Anquinette Stiles has been running that as the project manager. We have a really amazing team of Sherman College of Chiropractic students who have been working throughout the pandemic tirelessly, as well as a couple of recent graduates who are on the project from Sherman. And they've been working to get like all of the research together, not only as a guidelines document, but now we're working toward making a repository of that information. Because, you know, sometimes, a lot of times you see people post on Facebook, well, where can I find this research to support the work that we do and the benefit that we provide to humankind? And it's always like, okay, let me search again. Let me redo the Google search that everyone's done. And a service that we really want to provide to our profession is to have that type of easy access way to get to that information. And so we're working on that, and that's going to be really, really amazing. And it's something we could not have accomplished without the support of the profession over the years, the support of Mile High and everyone who comes there year after year. I know, having been the project manager for the first phase, what a big undertaking it is. So I'm really grateful that it's ongoing. I stepped away from that project when I started my master's in public health at Emory. And I'm pleased to say that I finished it during the pandemic last year. So that was an interesting time to teach online and be a student online and just live my life online. And in that, my thesis project was a quantitative analysis to estimate the prevalence of vertebral subluxation in a population. I got a great data set from Dr. Stan Pierce Jr. About almost 2,000 patients are in my study. And calculating the prevalence is really important because that's something that we talk about a lot. Like, well, who needs chiropractic care? And but people are going to say, everybody. And that's true, but in any given point in time, we don't actually know how many people are subluxated. And that's two things. One is, how are we defining that that person has a subluxation? So what is our operational definition? And does it include both a biomechanical component as well as neurology? So is there a neurological component that you're measuring and assessing it in some way? And that's not really been done, at least not well done on a larger scale in our research. So we need to establish those numbers using some type of strong operational definition. We're able to do that. And then the way I explain it to my students is we also have to explain the significance of it because, for example, unfortunately, developing gray hairs is part of the normal aging process. So if you say how many humans get gray hairs when they get older, I mean, it's upwards of, 97%, I would say, but does it mean anything? I mean, beyond vanity, we don't think so, right? It's not an indicator of your health. It's not an indicator of your well-being. It's not an indicator of anything. And so we also have to establish that it really means something to have a subluxation. And then, of course, on the back end to that, it means something to receive chiropractic care, to get adjusted, to reduce or correct the subluxation, to have experience better health out of that. So it's a multi-step process, but this is a big step number one. So now we're in the peer review process, just waiting to hear back from some editors to get to the next stages. So we're real excited about that.
That's really exciting. And people have to understand how important this is and how few researchers there actually are in the chiropractic profession. First thing relative to something you mentioned there, operational definition of subluxation. Can you say something about what that means? Our listeners may not know what that means. And not only know what that means, can you say something about the foundation's operational definition of subluxation?
So an operational definition is how we define something based in part on how it's measured objectively. So for example, if we're talking about how much a person weighs is based on using a scale to weigh them, whatever units of measurement, right? Pounds or kilograms for Canadian friends and such. So that's what an operational definition tells us. It tells us what something is based on measurements. And in chiropractic, as much as we, espouse the concept of the vertebral subluxation, and we have all of these different tools that different chiropractors use in their office to analyze, for some people, it's just Mopal, and so for some people, it's a lot more involved and uses technology. But at the end of the day, we know that there's a biomechanical component and a neurological component, and they both have to exist because a misalignment alone, at least from the foundation's viewpoint, does not warrant to call something a subluxation. And so that's where we stand as far as developing an operational an operational definition is using biomechanical information, and that's often based on x-ray, most oftenly based on x-ray for us, and then neurological components. There's a lot of different ways in which that can be measured. I use several different measurements in my paper, a combination of them that can be anything from, I don't want to call it basic, but more fundamental, like measurements on leg length inequality, which are, you know, broadly used by chiropractors, as well as more technologically driven measurements related to like thermography or surface EMG. So we can use a lot of different things to measure neurological function, but we have to be using at least one truly valid and reliable means. So meaning like it really tells us what we think it's telling us, valid, and also tells us that accurate information every time, being reliable.
And this is vital for people to understand in their office as well, not just in a research setting, but that they're actually delivering to the practice member what they say they're delivering, that somehow they're being accountable to an outcome. And so I really want people to understand, if you're focused on how you're changing spines in your practice, then focusing, making sure that there's a way that your outcome is assessing that, not necessarily every visit, but you know, during the course of a person's care, most certainly having a protocol to do that. Is that part of the research agenda, is having information so people can reference in their practices, oh, this is a valid objective outcome assessment of some kind?
Yes, it's definitely a chapter in the guidelines project looking at outcome assessment tools, looking at the validity and reliability of quite a few different like types of tools. And then, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all profession. You go to 10 different chiropractic offices and you'll experience 10 different things. And obviously there's a lot of different techniques, some that have a lot more research backing them and others that just haven't invested the energy into it. So we can't necessarily say one is way better than the other, whether it's technique or tool, but you have to use tools. And like you said, at the appropriate interval, you have to be able to and be willing to put what you're saying to the test by using these outcome measurements, these objective measurements, to show your patients that you are making changes.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that you can also reference evidence of that. So now with that, what's the current projects for the foundation in terms of following up? There was the Immunity Conference in 2020. Let's talk about how that was really just a shining star in the profession for 2020.
Yeah. I mean, it came at a ripe time for a number of reasons. I think that it was something that was considered for some time, like, oh, we should do this, we should really do this. And then the way things were going in the world, it was like, all right, this is the time, we need to do this. I really can't take any credit for the legwork that was done to put the event together. As you know, with you and Rochelle putting together Mile High year after year after year, I mean, it takes some dedication and passion, and maybe like a hard wall to like bang your head against every so often. good thing you're both chiropractors. But I mean, it could not have been done without the help of Miss Brooke Mills, who's a student at Sherman, who's been taking on a lot of the outreach efforts and day-to-day functions, administrative functions for the foundation. We're really grateful for her as a student. I remember when we first reached out to see if she'd want to get involved with us as she was starting Sherman College, her mom, Dr. Stephanie Mills, said, well, she's not a researcher. It's not her passion. And I said, yes, but she has a passion that we can really use. So we're really grateful for her to juggle being a student during this time with all the challenges like online learning and things like that, and being so dedicated to the foundation. And then, of course, Dr. McCoy, NCAR Futures for the work that they did and, you know, the money that they put, and then the support of the profession, really, all the people who showed up. It was just really kind of awesome energy. The presenters were really quite amazing. I think everyone was really excited to just be there and kind of share some information. And a lot of it was really interesting because no one was like, okay, here's my one research project on chiropractic and immunity. I mean, that's not really what it was, but it was really like, let's think about everything that we already have out there that supports a discussion about chiropractic and immunity. And it was really cool to see how well informed people were and how well prepared people were to have those conversations. It was really awesome.
And I have to say, I apologize for myself not knowing this. Is there a way for people to get the recordings of that? Does that exist?
The aim of the foundation was to really make that a live event for those who could attend. So the inaugural immunity conference was a live only event. But I think moving forward, there is a goal to have more information like that out for masses. And I think to some extent, people have realize like, oh, it's also really nice to be able to enjoy all this information in my pajamas in the comfort of my home. So there's the good of fellowship with each other that we all miss. And then there's also the ease and convenience that we've grown accustomed to. We've been doing primarily, Dr. Kent's been doing a series of interviews with the speakers, and those have been getting posted on social media and being shared through the foundation's website. And so you can get snippets from the event through those interviews with Dr. Kent. And they've all been really fantastic.
That's excellent. And there is a lot of resources. Many people don't know this. When you support the foundation, which I do, Mile High does, we encourage people to do. When you support the foundation, you have a lot of benefits and things you gain access to that people don't necessarily realize. Can you share a little bit about that, of how people can support the foundation and some of the resources they end up having access to?
And first and foremost, there's a lot of information just keeping people up to date with current events. So we have newsletters that go out, your support financially, and thank you again to the Knowles family and Mile High for all the support over the years. Your support definitely funds the work that we do. The students that are helping us with the Guidelines Project, for example, are working on a scholarship basis. It's also funded the master's in public health work that I've done, the PhD work that Dr. Simon Senzan's doing right now, which is, you know, a whole nother, like, in really incredible piece of body work that is most definitely going to become a permanent part of chiropractic history, focused on the history of chiropractic. I think it's really important that the foundation is involved in work that helps us fully realize where we came from and the players and people and motivations that led us to where we are. And he's putting that seminal work together. And your support, you know, leads us there. If you catch us at a Mile High or other events, sometimes there's extra perks. We've got, I think we've got like a secret warehouse of books and prints of information. And then certainly you can tie that to a subscription to the McCoy Press Journals to get access to all the really like latest research that's being published. So there's a lot of stuff that we're doing that we're trying to share with the public. Also, I want to say it's been 2 years now, which I can't believe, we started putting out more like a magazine version of some of this information. And that's something that could be shared with your practice members and the general public, as well as to be consumed by chiropractors.
Wow, that's super exciting. And we're grateful. I mean, I'm grateful, and really the whole subluxation adjustment focus aspect of the profession really owes you, yourself, the board, Dr. McCoy, a big debt of gratitude for the often thankless work because I know what it's like to be in there, in that realm. And it's vital for us to continue to support that. How can people support the foundation?
Visit vertebralsubluxation.org. There's a link. You can make a tax-deductible donation. We're a 501c3. Subscribe to our newsletter. Follow us on Facebook. Like our updates and our posts. We're also on Amazon Smile as a charitable organization. And so you can use Amazon Smile, and the Amazon will donate a small portion of the proceeds from your purchases. So as you're ordering all these packages while you're home and all that kind of stuff, a small percentage of that goes to the foundation as well. So there's lots of ways you can support us, but mostly just we love hearing, you know, that the work that we do is having a positive impact on everyone's ability to practice. And so we're grateful for that support. And I definitely miss seeing people and meeting people at events. And so I look forward to getting to a future Mile High for that experience again.
Well, we look forward to seeing you too, and also at other things, including Sherman events and other institutions events. What are things relative to research the field practitioner can do?
Well, one thing you can do is take really good notes. I mean, honestly, that is the best thing you can do, because you take care of somebody and a little while later you're like, this is really cool, I want to write about this. And the best thing you can do is have good notes that you or someone else can go back to and kind of just document what you've done. But if the notes aren't there, I mean, it's hard for you to remember, you know, all that you measured and all that happened. And it makes it that much harder to put that into research. So that's the number one thing, take good notes. The reason that the prevalence study was possible is because there was a central data repository for a bunch of clinics, about 8 clinics to put all of their input, all of their information into in a real-time basis. And so it was really sort of easy to get all of that together and just, you know, thousands of, you know, records in an Excel spreadsheet. So that's really the number one thing. And also in those records, you know, make sure you are using some valid and reliable measures to measure the subluxation.
Right, right. And it's so often that people don't do that. And this is not about a particular analysis protocol or technique package. It's about delivering clinically excellent care and just an aspect of good, a basic foundational aspect of delivering clinically excellent care. Again, whether it be diversified or CBP or network, is making sure you're documenting people's outcomes, that there's something objective and measurable that you can see change for the better. And there's very good ways to do that. Can you speak at all, and from a research perspective, about what are some reliable outcomes that outcome assessment tools people could use?
Well, an easy one that you could add to your practice, and one that's actually not an epidemiology study, but we'd love to add to next phases of the same type of measurement, is a quality of life measure. So using an SF-36 or NIH, the National Institutes of Health, has the PROMIS system, and they have a global health and well-being scale and measures two domains of health. So it's not just the physical, it's also mental or emotional well-being in there. So it's similar to the SF-36 that people are, you know, a lot of people are familiar with the SF-36, but 36 questions is a lot. And the global scale from PROMIS is, I want to say 10 questions, 10 or 11 questions. So it's a quick and easy piece that you could add to your re-exams, your new patient exams, as well as any re-physicals. And again, like I said earlier, don't do this stuff every day, but You can measure this stuff on an ongoing basis at intervals that work for your practice. And just that data alone is huge, because that's basically, like, those are the studies back in the day. I hate to say back in the day, but in the 90s, like Dr. Bob Blanks did on network and quality of life. A lot of it is based on what type of improvements are people seeing in these various domains of life? Because as we know, health is not just physical. We want to see where else these improvements are occurring. Because I think the idea of, oh, chiropractors and back pain and the physical relief is somewhat established, but what we really want to establish is all the rest. And so that, I would say, is the number one thing. If you don't have one like that going, just go online, download that scale. It's free, and keep good records on it.
And can you say anything about maybe if someone wants to learn about, there's got to be resources for someone wants to learn how to do a case study. I know there's a class that that you taught for a while, and like maybe people didn't have the privilege of taking that at that point. If people said they really had a heart for doing that, what could be a resource for them?
I know that there's a book that Dr. McCoy published a few years back. So Dr. Matthew McCoy's book on the individual experience, writing a case report. And so that could be a good start as well.
Cool. Very good. Is there anything last that you'd like to share with the chiropractic world today?
I just want to, thank everyone for hanging in there. And in public health, people say, the law and regulations tell us what we can do. But our ethics and our moral compass should tell us what we should do. And I just hope that we continue to, push forward with an understanding of, but understand what we should do. For me, what we should do is more research and more exploration about our profession. It goes beyond what you can or could do just in terms of taking care of people. Definitely should be taking care of people, but you should be trying to do a little bit more. So I just want to thank everyone who is truly doing a little bit more. And there's a lot of us out there, you included. So thanks for tuning in, and thanks for being part of the movement.
And thank you for serving the chiropractic profession as executive director of the foundation, as now the board, a member of the board, and all the things I know you'll continue to do in different areas of chiropractic. We at Mile High are very grateful. I know people listening and so many subluxation adjustment focused chiropractors are appreciative. So I want you to make sure it doesn't go unnoticed, even though you may not hear it all the time. Okay, so thank you. And thank you to the foundation. Again, I want to recommend people, if you are not yet on a regular recurring basis donating, supporting the Foundation for Vertebral Subluxation, I cannot emphasize enough that you want to think of that as your rent. Like, you pay your cable bill, you pay your light bill, there's a research bill that you should have. And it's just a line item, and it just happens automatically, and you are, contributing to that. If you want to be able to just think, this X number of adjustments a month, I'm contributing back to the profession as research. I cannot emphasize that enough. It's kind of your ethical duty, as Dr. Christy Kwan just said. So thank you so much, and everybody, thank you for being part of the chiropractic vision, and keep changing spines, lives, and minds with chiropractic. We will see you on Higher Ground in September 23rd to 26th, and it's Mile High, riseuptomilehigh.com. And as I said, keep changing spines, lives, and minds with chiropractic.